What's going on, everybody? This is Black Men Sundays. I'm your host, Corey Sylvester Murray, and we're talking about generational wealth, finance, business, and of course, mental health. It's a Black Man Sunday. Time to put all childish things away. I refuse to be the man I was yesterday. Gotta put my best foot forward and elevate. And before we introduce today's guest, I want to let you guys know we're celebrating our third annual Turkey Drive. We're feeding the Boys and Girls Clubs of Central Florida. You can see the link in our description. And if you're in your car, it'll be in your description on the podcast. If you're watching us on YouTube, it'll be linked in as well. So without further ado, let's introduce today's guest. We're talking to Everton Simmons. This brother is a financial advisor, Northwestern Mutual. This brother's from Jamaica. This brother lives in Long Island, New York City. So first off, Everton Simmons, welcome to Black Men Sundays, brother. How you doing?
Doing well. Thank you for having me.
So, you know, we're talking about, you know, this is the fall. We have the holidays coming up. New Year is like right around the corner. I was just hearing somebody say we're over just 100 days before the Super Bowl. So when we're talking about a financial reset, first off, what does a fall financial reset mean?
Wow. So that's a great question. So essentially, when it comes to fall financial reset, what you really want to do is take stock of what your current financial standings is and what you would like to be, where you'd like to be in the future. So that's some of the things that you want to look at. Then you want to start to think about what your future spending needs are. So whether it's for the holidays, or even just start to think about what your goals are for 2026. That's what I really want to think about when it comes to fall financial reset.
Gotcha. And why is fall a good time to have the financial reset?
One of the reasons we really think about it is there are a lot of holidays that are in the fall and then going into the winter. So there's a lot of spending that people typically have. And so if you start to think about how you're going to plan for your future, fall provides you a good opportunity to say, okay, I know how much spending I have to do. And once I get that cleared out, where am I going to be now going forward from there?
You know, as we're heading into the new year, what are some good financial habits that we should evaluate?
Good question. So when it comes to financial habits, one of the first things that I usually speak to clients about is having a budget. So if you don't know how much you're actually spending, then you're going to continue to spend and may put yourself in a position where you don't necessarily want to be. Another thing that I usually speak to clients about is getting all their bad debts paid off. So you have a difference between good debt and bad debt. We could talk a little bit more about what each of those kind of fall under, what category, or what falls under good debt, what falls under bad debt. But you want to start paying off all the bad debts, or at least developing a plan to get those debts paid off. And also along with the budget, I want you to also have a savings goal. So that whether it's 3 months, 6 months, or 1 month of expenses that you want to have saved, that's something else that I would say are some really good habits.
Okay, so I'm going to just be honest, man. It's Black Men Sundays. I do this show to get tips as well and to share it with the brother. So I'm just going to be honest, man. I feel like I'm the opposite. I feel like I'm more of like a spring financial resetter, meaning, okay, it's October, so I already have a slush fund set up for Christmas, slush fund for Thanksgiving, for, you know, I live in Florida, so we're on the turnpike. I have, you know, toll money ready to go. That's a couple hundred right there, by the way. But I just feel like for me, I wait until the new year to get my reset because I know the tax man, I know I'm gonna get my taxes back and I'll be able to take care of the debt, the credit card debt, the slush fund money, in case I go over that. Is that a bad idea to have, or should we really establish the reset now versus waiting until the new year after we've spent and enjoyed the holidays?
You know, whenever you think about what can be done now versus what I really want to try to do later, if you're in a position where you don't have to procrastinate, I would do it right now, right? Because what happens oftentimes is something else comes up. So if you're thinking about, oh, the tax, by the time I get the tax refund, I'll use that to clear out the credit cards, something ends up happening, right? And so now it's like, oh, I didn't plan for that. But if you start making your plans right now and something happens, at least you have a plan in place, right? So the old adage, failing to plan is planning to fail. So I much rather have a plan today and be proactive about it rather than reactive.
That's great information, man. Let's talk about you a little bit, man. You live in Long Island, New York. You're from Jamaica, the island, not Jamaica Queen. So what made you get in the financial game? Like, what made you become a financial advisor?
Great question. I appreciate you asking that. Yes, Jamaica, West Indies, all my fellow Jamaicans out there, they want to hear me say something probably. I'll give them a little tip of that later. But essentially what made me get into the financial planning game in terms of making sure I'm helping clients, before this, I did debt settlement and I helped people that had a lot of unsecured debt. And the problem or the challenge that I was facing was that when I worked with clients, I would help them get on board and then I was finished with them. I just wanted to be able to work with people proactively again before they get to that point where they have the debt. How can I help to prevent them getting debt? And how can I continue to nurture that relationship that we've developed? Right? People are sharing their personal financial situations with me. They're telling me more about themselves. And quite frankly, some of their own families know, right? So I like to have that relationship. So I switched from what I was doing before and I got started in the financial planning field where I can help work with clients, prevent them from getting into debt. Most importantly, build wealth and protect that, build generational wealth as well. And so I really love and appreciate the work that I do. And more importantly, the clients that I work with. They love and appreciate the work that I do.
Oh, great information. And we've had a few brothers from Northwestern Mutual on the show. So I feel like at this point, Northwestern Mutual and Blackman Sundays, we're family, man. So what I want to ask you now is, how do we prepare for 2026, where I want to go in that new year? I want to feel confident, no matter what your income level for the brothers and sisters listening, no matter what their financial status is now, what are some tips to go into 2026 the way you feel prepared and confident?
Good question. I often liken financial planning. Firstly, you want to have a plan, right? And what I often make a comparison of it is like building a house, right? So if you are building a house, one of the things that you're going to do is establish a solid foundation. A lot of times people start thinking about how to build wealth, but they don't think necessarily about how to protect it. And what are the steps in building wealth? So I want the solid foundation. That's the debts paid off, emergency fund built up. You should have some type of maybe estate planning work done if you need that, or start to consider what are the things that you need to do to make sure that your family's protected. And then under the any of the debts and the risks that you can't protect, you want to make sure that you put some type of plan in place for that. Then I want you to start building upon that. Start thinking about your retirement savings, how you want to put money away to grow for the future. Those are basically the ways that I would approach it. But I think the number one thing is to have a plan in place. And that's why it's so important to really have someone like an accountability partner that you can work with that can keep that and keep you in track when it comes to that financial plan.
Got you. Okay, great information, man. And when we're talking about setting up, like you said, estates, we've had an estate planner on the show. And I want to reiterate, setting up a trust. A lot of brothers want to have trust set up. Is that something that a financial advisor can set up, can help set up for your customers?
Good question. So we're not like me myself, I'm not an attorney, so I'm not going to set up a trust, right? The person or the people that you go to is some estate planning attorney. Usually you want to go to someone that specializes in estate planning, right? So you don't want like a general practitioner setting that up. You want to have someone that's their specialty. And whether it's a trust, which is just there to make sure that the assets are well protected and transfers the way in which you would like, there are also some other benefits to the trust. Sometimes you can just have a will, right? Some clients I see that come to me saying they want to get a trust set up. As we start to evaluate their assets, their liabilities, and their need to actually have a trust, whether revocable or irrevocable, it turns out that they could just probably set up a will. And that all takes time, right? So having something in place in the interim while you determine how you want that trust set up, I think is more important necessarily than trying to figure out trust and which type of trust to get. Although I would say there are many people that I work with that the trust is super important for them.
Gotcha. And you mentioned irrevocable and revocable trust. Let's clarify what the difference is between those.
Yep. And again, this is something that I would speak to an attorney about. So the big difference is with a revocable trust, you can go back and make some updates and changes and adjustments to the assets that are in that trust, right? You can make updates and changes to the trust itself. With an irrevocable trust, you can't make any changes. It's once it's set pretty much in stone. Again, I would go, and this isn't legal advice, so I'd go to an attorney and have them help you figure out, do you need a revocable trust, irrevocable trust? Sometimes it's people will have like Medicare trust, so you want to have those things, Medicaid trust, sorry. You want to have those things properly looked at with an attorney.
Gotcha. Okay. But I mean, but on a financial sector, so I mean, we'll have an attorney look at it, but we wouldn't establish it with our financial advisor, is what you're saying?
So your financial advisor is kind of like the quarterback, right, to your plan. So we're going to connect with your attorney, at least a good financial advisor is connecting with your attorney, connecting with your maybe your insurance planner if they're not doing it themselves, they're connecting with your accountants because you want to have your plan working for you. And not having that person, that quarterback in the center that's connecting and making sure that they're communicating with everyone, it's like trying to run some kind of offense. And if you think about football, right, I'm just thinking about Black Men Sunday, right, Sunday football, you're trying to run this offense and none of the wide receiver isn't communicating with the quarterback, the offensive line, no one is actually communicating. It's not going to work. It's not going to work. You're not winning a championship that way.
Gotcha. So when we're establishing this team, like, I have a financial advisor, I have an accountant. Who all do we need on our team, outside of those? You said a financial advisor, an attorney, and I have an accountant as well. So is that good enough, or do we need some more players on our team, essentially?
A good property and casualty, and person that specializes in property and casualty insurance. You want to probably have someone that does some type of insurance that's more so on the life disability side or annuities, that kind of thing is going to be other people that you can typically have on your team.
Got you. And also, and I'll ask this question, then I'll open it up to let my brothers engage with you as well. For brothers that, because I've heard of, a lot of brothers that they have a new job and they have their annuity, they have pensions established with the company. How long do you have to move that money before, you lose it? Because I've heard people say, oh, I worked for this company for 10, for 15 years. I'm with a different company, but I didn't think of moving the money. So, how much time do you have to move that money?
So each company's contracts are a little bit different. Usually that money is yours, right? Unless the when you signed up, the contract said something specific, like if you leave before a certain time, the company, you won't get that money. So there's defined contribution and defined benefit. The defined benefit is where it's just a straight pension. And again, that really depends on did the company make the contribution or did you make it? A defined contribution plan is like your 401ks, 457, 403b plans, where you're making that contribution yourself. Now, if and when you leave, that money that you contributed is yours. There's no time limit on when you can move it. But I would typically have clients think about moving it much sooner than letting it just sit out there. These companies change plan sponsors. And unless you're very good at tracking and sticking to each letter and document that comes to you, if you don't move, for example, you may end up forgetting about a plan that's out there and not having access to it. And is it still going to be yours? Yes, right? But you have to figure out how to track that down later on, and you don't want to be in that position typically.
Yeah, because I've heard people say, I've, like I said, I've transferred to a different job. I've been there in a while, but they didn't move the money. But for the people that are thinking about moving the money, would you say moving it into a traditional IRA would be the best move?
So you can move it into an IRA. You can move it into your new company if they have a similar plan. And you can also just leave it. So I wouldn't usually have clients do the last one. I would usually have them move it into their new company or put it in an IRA. Now, something to keep in mind, if it's a Roth, if you made contributions into Roth, you can't move Roth into a traditional. And you can't move traditional directly into a Roth, right? So you would have to open up, if you have a traditional 401k, you have to open up a traditional IRA and move that money there. If you have a Roth 401k, you have to move the money into a Roth IRA. That's if you're doing it that way. And there's some other nuances that come along with it. Again, this is where you have a conversation with a professional like myself to figure out what's going to make the most sense for you.
Hey, everything good to see you. Good to hear you on the show. My name is Kalali Dobe. I'm from Prince Frederick, Maryland. It's Southern Maryland out here in Calvert County. How you doing?
Nice to meet you, Kali. Nice. Going well. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. Doing all right. Definitely like to say thanks for joining with us and sharing some information with us. First question I got for you is just like, so how do you even become a financial advisor?
Many people ask me things like this. Basically, there's a couple of steps, right? So you have to get certain licenses, your securities license, insurance license, and you can also go on further to get your CFP, which is your certified financial planner, your retirement. There are different designations that you can go on and get, but usually you have to get your insurance licenses and your securities license. Then it's your job to continue to keep yourself educated. So you'll officially be ruled a financial advisor just by having the licenses. But to properly execute and do the financial planning and give proper recommended financial advice, you want to make sure that you're continuing to educate yourself. So that's through reading, that's through seminars. There are multiple ways that you could go about that.
And so like yeah, so like with for instance for me with my church, I do a financial class. I'm not a financial advisor, but I do a financial class, just like some basic principles. And something that always comes up whenever I talk about that people should have a financial advisor or a financial planner is they still don't trust financial planners. So like what's kind of like some reasons why people should have a financial planner and why they should, be able to overcome that, because sometimes it's still a barrier with some people about, actually going to a financial advisor.
That's an interesting thing, and I'll actually put that question back at you a little bit because I'm curious what are some of the reasons that they don't trust. Some reasons as I would say why they should have a financial advisor is that there's actually studies that show that people that work with a financial advisor have more financial security, more peace of mind, less anxiety about their future. They usually have somewhere around 3 times the retirement income saved than someone that didn't work with a financial advisor. And there's a lot more tax-aware strategies that a financial advisor, again, can provide that client. So I'm curious, but what are some of the reasons that they have? Because maybe I could address
So,
some of those.
well, yeah. So some of the, I mean, just like a general distrust, people think that like financial advisors aren't necessarily useful, and you hear like the high, some of the high level stories of like athletes or entertainers or whoever have had financial advisors who have then like ripped them off or done other things, and then a lot of it too is just lack of education on exactly what a financial advisor does. So it's that skepticism of, financial advisor is just somebody who's going to charge me, a certain fee to, so-called manage my money, not really help me out, you know what I'm saying? And then potentially take my money. And then, just a lack of education of, well, what is really a financial advisor going to do for me that I can't do for myself?
Those are fair points and fair concerns. Again, that's why you want to really vet the person that you're working with. Speak with them. There are plenty of people also that don't charge fees or for financial advice or anything like that. So you can work with people like those. They don't necessarily have to manage your money. There are financial advisors like those as well. If you're working with someone that is helpful, there are many studies that will show you that there is gains to your portfolio, like I said, financial peace, security, all those things. A thing that I want to really have you hone in on, though, is if you just think about it, if you go to a good restaurant, right, you had a fantastic meal, what's the likelihood that you would leave a review? You just anticipate that that's how the restaurant standards are, right? It's a great restaurant. I don't need to leave a review because I had a great experience. That's the standard. If you go to somewhere and you were expecting very good service and you got poor service, you're more likely to leave a review or tell someone, don't go there. I had poor service, right? And so a lot of times what we'll see happens is the people that are the loudest are the people that had a poor experience when it comes to financial advisors. And there are many, many situations where there were red flags and they just ignored it for various reasons. And so it's unfortunate that that trust factor has been affected by these people. Going back to that's the reason why I go about the business the way I do, because I want to make sure that my clients are educated about what it is that we're doing with them. And the work that we do is not necessarily for them, it's also for their children and the people that's coming after. I take my business very serious.
I guess my final question is, so we talked about, so you did touch on debt, good debt and bad debt. Could you go deeper into what that is? So like, what's good debt? What's bad debt?
So, good debt typically is debt that's accumulated in an event, in an endeavor to get more income, or you get some kind of asset. So, for example, a mortgage. In most cases, right, you have paid, you're paying this in, you have this debt that you've acquired, but in exchange for that debt, you have a place to live, or maybe it's an investment property, right? So you're getting some fair exchange for that debt. Student loans typically considered good debt. And if you go out and you get the right degree, you're anticipating making more money. And so you'll trade that in that instance. Other things that I'll look at, sometimes what's the interest rate, right? So if you take out a loan and the interest rate is lower than what you could get in another investment, then that's good debt in my opinion, especially if you can pay the debt itself, right? Or the loan was taken out to do some kind of capital movement that's going to provide you more return that you can then use to pay the debt off. In those instances, those are good debt. Bad debt. Credit cards, very easy. I think car loans typically are bad debt, at least the way how people accumulate these car loans. They're typically bad debt. And some personal loans, again, bad debt. It's usually what you're doing with it. Is it going to provide you a return? And is the interest rate high? So credit cards, as we know, typically 15% and up, right? And then we also have charge cards that people use as credit cards. A charge card, you're supposed to pay it off like at the end of the month, and people will let that debt sit there and the interest accumulates much quicker. So those are bad debt. Now, why is it important that you pay the debt off? Well, let's just think about it. As long as you are paying debt, you cannot build wealth, right? The borrower is the slave to the lender. And I don't want to be the person that's helping someone else build wealth. I'd much rather build that wealth for myself. So it's very important that you eliminate debt, especially bad debt, as quickly as possible, and then work your way from like a domino effect on paying off the bad debt, then start to work on the good debt. Now, while doing this, you want to still be in a process where you're trying to accumulate some wealth, but don't do that before that bad debt is paid off.
That sounds great, man. I definitely appreciate you taking time to share some information with us. That's all the questions I got, so I'll turn it back over to Corey.
Yeah, definitely, man. Everton Simmons, you enjoying yourself on Black Men Sundays?
Yeah, I'm having a great time.
Good, man. So I want to ask you a couple more questions before we get out of here. One is, when we talk about establishing generational wealth, from your point of view, what's the best tips and the best three ways with your expertise to generate and create generational wealth?
Great, great question. And I love this because what happens I see a lot of times is people are trying to find the quickest way. And your question was, what's the best way? Right? So one of those is like me and Kali just talked about, don't carry a lot of debt. Right? So pay that off as quickly as possible. As long as you are paying interest, you are not gaining interest for the most part, right? Or you want to make sure that you're paying off those debts as quickly as possible. I think everyone should have some type of investment that they're putting money into, right? You have the stock market, you have real estate. Those are some places that you can make sure that you're putting money. So you have to start to look to slowly accumulate wealth. Oftentimes people are looking to how to get wealth quickly. The people that I find are investing in the market, looking at balancing that or diversifying that with some kind of real estate or commodities. Those are people that are usually going to accumulate wealth more consistently than people that's trying some get rich overnight scheme. That's usually not working. I think we should all have some type of income protection or life insurance on us as well, right? As well as your estate planning. So the estate planning has to be there to make sure that you're protecting that which you have built over time. Life insurance is there to make sure if someone passes away, it's going to replace the income that they otherwise would have had. It will also eliminate any debt that people may be carrying. And quite frankly, it could also leave money behind for the next generation. So you're leaving them with a leg up, right? So you want to leave them with assets, not liabilities. And when it comes to your income protection, what this is where if you can't work for whatever reason, your plan doesn't get impacted. So you still have income coming in. Again, going back to it, you want to make sure that you have your controllables handled on that foundation and your uncontrollables. So you can't control whether you pass away unexpectedly. You can't control if you get hurt. Again, unexpectedly, you can develop some kind of illness and we can do our best, but these things happen. So you want to make sure you protect those as much as possible. Those are some of the surefire ways to build and accumulate wealth and protect it at the same time as a bonus.
Wow, I didn't hear you say real estate.
Oh, real estate, I mentioned in the investment. So I think real estate is a very important way to build wealth. Here's the thing. Typically speaking, we hold, as Black people, we hold 70% of our wealth in real estate. And real estate will grow, and it usually keeps pace with inflation, but we also don't have all the protection mechanisms in place. So, for example, like a trust, at what point is that property going into a trust? Are we paying it off? Are we making sure we don't do like reverse mortgages on our properties, for example, and now losing that asset, or maybe protecting it from Medicaid, right? These are some of the things. Working with a financial advisor, we'll be able to have those conversations addressed. Now, my desire is to make sure that as we're building on assets within real estate, you're also doing it in equities, because the stock market historically has grown significantly faster than the real estate market has, coupled with the fact that the barrier to entry into the stock market is significantly lower than it is to purchase a property. Usually you're talking about tens of thousands of dollars to start to actually invest into real estate, where to invest in the stock market can take a couple of dollars, right? So it's not so much about doing one or the other, but how can we combine all these different strategies to help us build our wealth building portfolio?
Oh, great information, man. And I just want to get a quick scenario. So I have $10,000. Should I pay off credit card debt? Should I invest it in the stock market? Should I put that in an emergency fund? Because I hear people say, you know, I have money, I invest in the stock market, but I still carry credit card debt. Then I hear some people say, pay the credit card debt off first before you invest in the markets. And I hear some people say, make sure your emergency fund has sufficient money in there before you invest in the stock market and before you even pay off cards. So from a financial advisor's point of view, if I'm carrying credit card debt, I'm thinking about investing in a business, or investing in the stock market or setting up an emergency fund. So what order, if I have $10,000, what order should I pay things off with first?
Again, this is why it's so important to work with a financial advisor, because I get questions like these, and I get it, I appreciate the question, but it really depends on the financial scenario and where that person is, right? So to think about, well, if it's $2,000 of credit card debt, then yeah, it might make sense to pay it off, but do you have an injection of cash coming later on? I'm looking at paying off the debts typically first. Now, concurrently, you're going to be making sure that you have some emergency fund. Because if you pay off the debt and have no money saved, so an emergency comes, you need a new engine or whatever the thing is that happens, right? Your tires, and now you have to go back to the credit cards. Well, you just defeated the whole purpose of paying the debt off. So the scenario is a little bit more nuanced than that. The next thing is when it comes to investments, you have to understand that one of your greatest asset, and probably the only asset that you truthfully have, is time. Probably your most important, right? So when it comes to debt, time is impacted by debt, right? Or your debt is impacted by time. The longer you carry that debt, the more interest you're going to pay. The longer it takes for you to invest into stocks and real estate, the less wealth you can carry because there's less time for that to compound and build. And the same thing when it comes to, well, your savings has the least impact of these, but you should have, again, like 3 to 6 months of savings, whether fixed expenses or just income that you want to have saved. And the idea is to how can I concurrently accomplish these versus looking at a sequential order? I find a lot of times this is what holds us back. I'm going to do this, then this, then this, which is very good. But if you're working with a financial advisor, oftentimes we can show you how to accomplish all of these things concurrently, and figure out what's going to put you in the best position.
Great information, man. That's what we're talking about. Because I'm not gonna lie, man. Before I started doing this podcast, I didn't have a financial advisor. I didn't see the need. I didn't see the need to have an accountant. But after all these episodes, I totally get it. A lot of brothers say, "Well, I don't want to pay somebody commission with my money." But I'm like, they're helping you build. And I totally get that. So my last question for you, because it is Sunday, I know you probably got some good Sunday dinner waiting for you up in Long Island, man. So when we're talking about like different funds, like we already discussed the Roth, we discussed the traditional, are you familiar with the donor advised funds, like the DAFs? It's like a charitable fund where, because basically what I'm getting at is, I'm looking for some funds where I'm not going to get hit with so many taxes, because I see so many people have these funds where they're Roths. I'm not the Roth, but they're traditionals or different, or they're 401ks. But the problem that I hear the most from people is that I need to figure out a way to avoid these ridiculous taxes. So, I've heard people say that they set up a donor advised fund. It's more of like a charitable investment account. So I'm just trying to see if there are any other funds that, whether you can either defer the taxation or are there some loopholes?
So the IRS code is written to make sure that you have plenty of ways to minimize the taxes. Donor advised fund, very familiar with it. Things that you want to keep in mind there, and again, I'm not giving specific financial advice. If that's something that we have to speak a little bit more and learn more about your specific situation or anyone else for that matter for given advice. That's going to be money, though, that you're going to spend regardless. So, yes, you can use it to lower your income, but there are also many tax deferred vehicles that you can use to lower your expenses anyway, right? So, before you jump into that, I would start to look at what you're maximizing in these other avenues to minimize your tax impact. And then other strategies, because I see people, they'll have ways that they have so much income coming in. And that income is just generating more taxes for them. So rather than having that, what are some other things that we could do that will generate income for you, but not be as penal from a tax perspective?
Oh man, great information, man. I hope I didn't hit you with too many hard questions. You know, this Black Men Sundays, we don't throw snowballs over here. You know what I mean?
No, I loved it. And if I could leave you guys with one thing, I would say, you know, there's so many studies that show that we're just shy of $2 trillion as a people in spending power per year. $2 trillion, right? There's a big deal coming up right now that Elon Musk is going to be the first trillion. So we're spending that. There are countries that don't have that much spending power. And we're, as a people in this country, have that much spending power. What that means is that there's a plenty of ways for us to save, invest. I always say what doesn't get measured doesn't get managed, right? So you want to make sure that you're managing your finances, managing your income, and managing these things. And you see it in the Bible. I always liken it back to the story with Joseph, where he talked about the 7 years of plenty and the 7 years of famine. And so it's really important that you start to implement some of these strategies that are from a biblical perspective. You speak to financial advisors that this is our expertise. That way, when those years of famine come, you've already planned for it. And as the years of plenty are coming up, you can just simply enjoy that bounty even more. And so that's what I really want to leave everyone with.
So for people that missed the boat this go round, what would you recommend they do? Or even if there's something that they can do now, but I just know like certain people like me sometimes, I already got the bad debt low enough to where I'm comfortable with it. But for us that, for the brothers and sisters that missed the boat, what would you recommend to get started? Like I said, for me, I'll do a slush fund. So I just pull the money out of that for vacations and stuff. But what advice would you have for people that already missed the boat this go round?
Well, they may have thought that they missed the boat. They probably haven't, right? And so I would really first take stock of, did you actually miss the boat? You probably are still in a position where you can do something about a lot of this. So I would speak to a professional, right? Find someone that isn't necessarily going to have to charge you to have a conversation. You can do some research. Then I would start to map out where exactly you are and where you'd like to be, right? And then I'd probably do that before you speak to someone. Figure out where you are, where you'd like to be, and then start to work on an action plan to get you where you'd like to be at. And I would do it right now before you start thinking about that you missed the boat. And it really comes back to how we talk to ourselves. You didn't miss the boat. The boat's still there. Everything is happening within the time that it's supposed to. So don't feel like, don't measure up yourself to someone else, whether, you know, whatever you're doing, the trying to keep up with the Joneses. Don't worry about that so much. Let's develop a plan to help you pay it off. I would start off, like I said, paying off some of the bad debt, starting the savings, and then start to look at. So I had a client came in and he was like, oh, Everton, I want to do this. And I said, hey, let me show you how much money you would have had you done this thing that I'm telling you 20 years ago. And when he saw how much money he was going to have, he was like, okay, Everton, you're good. You're right. I'm not going to try that anymore. So sometimes just getting some conscience, some contents of where you would be if you simply stick with the plan is powerful enough to prevent you from making some of the bad choices that you otherwise would have because you thought you missed a boat.
What are some ways that we can reduce debt to optimize our savings?
You have plenty of ways. You have loans, you have balance transfer, you have snowball method, avalanche method, you have HELOCs. Like there's so many ways that you can try to get debt managed, but it's not going to get managed. Again, like I said, what doesn't get measured will be mismanaged. What gets measured is properly managed. It's not going to get managed and paid off if you're not measuring it. So let's sit down, figure out, and it doesn't have to be with me, right? Figure out where you are, and let's start to figure out which of those strategies is going to make the most sense for you. I had clients, for example, she had $150,000, around $150,000 of student loans. We got that paid off over the course of a couple of years, and the reason for that is because she wanted to go into another job. I had another person that had about $30,000 of credit cards. So there are ways that we can have all of this taken care of. It's just figuring out what's going to make the most sense and where you are financially so you can execute the option that will make the most sense for you.
All right, well, there it is, man. Everton Simmons, financial advisor, Northwestern Mutual, man. Thanks for coming on Black Men Sundays. I appreciate you. Appreciate the wealth of knowledge, the information, and enjoy the rest of your week, man.
Yeah, pleasure. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it and love the show. It's a Black Man Sunday.